Blog Talk Radio.
To the Solace of Shadows. This is your host, Robert M. Last week, or I should say, on the last show, we did a show about nightmares, and there were a few carryovers, and so we're going to continue with those, and then we will announce our next topic. And I think Pam will be joining me in this endeavor, so whenever Miss Pam is around, she can say hello.
Hello, Mr. Robert. How's it going?
No, it's going. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I get that. Yep. Good intro music, and it looks like a great lineup of poetry tonight.
Yep, indeed. So we'll be doing our carryovers. For the most part, I may be doing them in order, but I may hop around a little bit. We'll see what happens. So I know that you had a write for, you put a write for the show too. And
yeah, but mine is a if needed write. Like get through the carryovers first. And then, yeah.
Exactly.
I think we were kind of on the same page for that.
Yeah. All right. So do we have any other callers? If not, let's continue with the poetry.
Not at this moment. Right now, it's just us two dark turkeys.
Ah, well, gobble, 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 as they say. So I'm going to post this one by Neutron Bomb. I think they wanted to read it last time. Hi, Stelena. I'm going to post this, and if there is no audio to it, Pam, why don't you give that a read for me, please?
All right. This is Second Skin by Neutron Bomb, and it goes like this. Slice my ears off, silence. I ache for silence, shuddering loose of my second skin, no longer lanky limbs but scales, like a mermaid gaining legs and seeking land to bask in the arias of the sea urchins that soften the shoreline in phosphorescent aqua. I drown each night, suffocating with the dislodgement of air pockets. From my lungs, my voice escapes me. I cannot scream, only succumb to the vibrations of the waves and the wispy willows that flock. My corpse, Ophelia, you look at one with the vines and seagrass that tangle around your ankles, drawing you into a watery grave. End poem.
Wow. That really hit home for me because I have a fear of the ocean, you know, and thinking about just the very life in the ocean kind of ending your life and bringing you down to it, you know, putting you back into the earth, so to speak. The ending, especially the tangle around your ankles, drawing you into a watery grave. I was like, oh man, that is nightmarish. And then, from my lungs, my voice escapes me. I cannot scream, only succumb to the vibration of the waves and the wispy willows that flock. That's like being like drowned to me. It seems like a really like terrifying experience, and you captured that very well in this. I think so. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree with you. I think drowning would be a terrifying experience. You know, actually, one of the few memories I have from a really earlier age was of actually going under the water when I couldn't swim. And, you know, they say that drowning is the most painful way to die. And I think it's not just the pain of it, but the helplessness of it. This is a powerful, right? Beautifully written couplets. I like how it's about that desire for silence to the point of wanting to wish that one could slice their own ears off. And I like that she brought in Ophelia and, you know, because of the Ophelia being from the Shakespeare play, I believe, was it Hamlet or I can't remember which one, but, who committed suicide by drowning herself. I drown each night, suffocating with the dislodgement of air pockets. From my lungs, my voice escapes me. I cannot scream, but only succumb. Those are definitely powerful lines there, and very well done.
Yeah, I have to agree about the whole pain factor because it's not like necessarily like drowning is not, it's not just a physical death, is psychological as well, because you know what's happening and you're so helpless to do anything about it. And all you can do is feel it slipping away. And it's pretty bad. Thank you, Neutron.
And absolutely. I was going to say that it's a good thing that other than the heat that you live in the desert part of California.
Mm-hmm.
I don't imagine the ocean reaches you.
Oh, no. No, well, I've been in the ocean, and that's one of the reasons.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep.
The same thing happened to me. I got carried under the water and tossed around in the current, and I couldn't swim.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's how I can relate.
Very sweet.
All right. So we're going to move on now. And this one is by Daniel Duhame, and I guess I will give this one a read. Let's see. Okay. Dreamer's Torment by Daniel Duhame. To sleep in the wings of dreams is but a curse of slumber, faded earth left to chance. A diabolical being waits in anticipation for eyes that drift off into darkness with a foul stench of nightmares, slowly picking away at the dreamer, robbing them of tranquil bliss. No prayer can release the curse. A name is attached to the dark being called a dream lover, but it can never be described as dreamy. Weary eyes fall silent, drifting into a sleepless death, consumed by torment. Slowly the entity rises like a black slime until it takes its true form, a shadow devoid of light. A prisoner of dreams entangled by long yellow fingernails, reaching out to pull you into a cavern of despair. Sleep will only come at death's door to release the demon's lust, to persecute the dreamer. Sleep well, gentle folk. Recite the prayer of protection before closing your eyes to the world. And poem. Wow. That was right down my alley. It was wickedly dark and descriptive in the sense of a name is attached to the dark being called a dream lover, but it can never be described as dreamy. Weary eyes fall silent, drifting into a sleepless death consumed by torment. It seems to me as though it's a it's kind of one of those reoccurring nightmares, and to keep coming back, and you just can't help but feel tired because you don't get rest. It just keeps robbing you, like how he says, slowly picking away at the dreamer, robbing them of tranquil bliss, you know, and I can understand that and relate to it because, you know, insomnia and then nightmares, they take their toll after a while. And then even when you're awake, you can't, you know, you can't do much about it. So like you end up falling slightly short of sanity. Yeah, I really enjoyed this piece. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. I like how you said the idea of falling slightly short of sanity, and it's definitely a very relatable write. I like how it brings in the idea of mythology behind nightmares, not just the nightmare itself, you know, but how oftentimes there's people try to explain, you know, in mythological ways how nightmares come about. And there's a very haunting feel to this. It's extremely dark and visceral, especially with slowly the entity rises like a black slime until it takes its true form, a shadow devoid of light. Another thing about this rite that I really liked and it grabbed my attention, and I know this is going to sound maybe a little strange, but at the end where it says, sleep well, gentle folk, recite the prayer of protection. I couldn't help think about, like, as a child, when you say that prayer, now I lay me down to sleep, pray the Lord my soul to keep, and if I die before I wake. And it makes me think about how oftentimes there's religions that use fear as a way of manipulation. And even from a young age, we're trained. And I'm not saying everybody, because I know everybody grows up in different religions or not religions. But oftentimes with like a prayer like that, you're trained even at a young age to feel like you have to constantly be on guard and protect yourself and say just the right thing before bedtime. So I found this actually a really intriguing, dark rite and very well done.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that because a lot of people back in the days, well, even now still, were very much into superstition and also besides superstition, they had like belief structures that even centered and catered to dreams. and they perform all kinds of rituals before sleep and when they woke up in the morning, you know, like, you know, spreading petals around the room, you know, like flower petals. And there's quite a few like rituals that I've seen, but they're not coming to mind right now, but that I know of that people used to do a lot back in the days, just to,
oh, wow,
to keep the nightmares at bay. Yeah. I'll try and I should actually do a, nah, this is be too close to this show. I guess I should do a show about those rituals, but no. But yeah, this is very interesting. If you, I'll probably even link some to you. But yeah, I thought this really touched well on that, and that your mentioning of it was pretty awesome. So thanks, Pam.
Absolutely.
Let's see, where will we go now? All right. Do we have any other callers?
We do not at this time.
Okay. Well, then let's move on. This one is by Rose Winter, and I will have you read this one, Pam.
All right. I'd be happy to. Bad dreams are ghosts of our fears and worries haunting us while we sleep. Maria V. Sater. Nightmarish scenario of dystopian world community. Human rights are universal. So why are they not respected universally throughout our world? If they were enforced, then we should surely be living in a peaceful world where no war ever takes place at all on Earth. A perfect set of noble sentiments is all they are in the end when tyranny overruns community values. End poem.
Yeah, that's very relatable even nowadays, especially with all the death and destruction going on. Human rights are universal, so why are they not respected universally throughout the world? It's true. There's a lot of countries that have their own version of rights, and George Carlin even did a skit about that, and but I won't go into it. Yeah, it's weird how different countries have different numbers of different rights, as he said. And in a lot of ways, you know, we should feel lucky for what we have, but at the same time, it's not real. It's almost as if it's an illusion of sorts, and it's all due to control and things like that. And this brevity kind of brings out a lot of thought towards the subject. And a perfect set of noble sentiments is all they are in the end when tyranny overruns community values. I mean, that sums it up right there, you know. And it is very dystopian and nightmarish, you know. We're kind of like living in like a false reality, it seems almost. Like it just doesn't even seem real how far things have come. But at the same time, we've evolved as a species, and we just need to make a few changes, and I think everything will be a whole lot better. Well, sorry for rambling, but it just provoked a lot of thoughts in me, and that's what it's supposed to do. What do you think, Pam?
Absolutely, and I think it was great to hear you rambling, because, you know, I could tell that it triggered a lot of thoughts, and as you said, that's what poetry's supposed to do, and to do that within a brevity, I think is a great example of poetry. I like how she speaks on an individual nightmare, but also a world nightmare, an idea that so many people see that the dystopian vision of this world that has so much darkness in it, so much war and tyranny. And I thought this was a great write all the way through. And I like how she mentions, you know, that at the end, where the idea that tyranny overruns community values. So excellent write and very well done.
Indeed. That's always a nice treat when you get that's what I call short but sweet brevity.
There you go.
Okay, so This next piece is by Sea Glass, and it is called Gate 23. And I guess I will give it a read. Gate 23 is opening, and before the air steward calls for boarding, my husband says he's off to the toilets or kiosk for coffee, chocolate, and newspaper. He does this every flight. In the dream, it's ice cream for Lekka. I threaten, we're boarding without you. Then here we are, standing at the desk, telling the steward, we're waiting for my husband to come back from the kiosk. Lekka says, Daddy's buying ice cream. He smiles at her and says, ma'am, your husband's boarded. We go through the gate, climb the steps, hand our passes to the cabin steward. I ask, is my husband here? He says yes and points through that door. The door opens into a cream-colored tubular tunnel. We walk and walk and find a green door. I knock. It opens to a lady wearing a perky green hat and jacket. She trills. You want the white door? And points us to turn left. We turn left, knock the white door and wait. A white hat and jacket lady opens the door. I say, I'm looking for my husband. The cabin steward says, he's here. I hand her my passport and boarding pass. She glances at the documents, looks up and says, ma'am, your husband is dead. I wake up, sitting bolt upright, a hole blown through my solar plexus, shivering in shock and choking for breath. And in poem. Wow. Wow. Those type of dreams to where your family members are end up dead are very, very, usually very vivid and just heart-wrenching. Like when you wake up, you can't help but sweat and breathe. When I used to have those type of nightmares, I was breathing heavy, waking up, you know, and I was just sweating and I was just so panicked. And then I go and I check on my mom and be like, oh, okay, she's okay. Or, you know, if it was my grandma, I'd check on her. So, you know, that's very, very frightening, especially when it comes to someone you know and love, you know. And it says the reoccurring nightmare began a year after he died in a hospice, not a plane. Oh, like I was a teenager and not 8 years old. It was always the same in every detail. So, yeah, it's another one of those reoccurring nightmares, but that hits closer to home since it's based in reality, you know. So that's pretty deep. What about you? What do you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to say that you're right. This is, because it is based on reality, it hits home. You know, I like, one of the things I liked about this contest and this topic was the fact that it allowed people to share their nightmares that they've experienced. You know, and my heart goes out to her having lost her husband. And I think it's so difficult to have those reoccurring dreams and to have reoccurring dreams where, you know, you're being visited by or looking for someone who has died. You know, the two times I ever had reoccurring dreams in my life, one was this dream I used to have over and over again where I went to visit this land, and it was weird. It was almost like you would describe it as dystopian. Like everything was just out of place. I felt completely lost. But every time I would have to go walk through this desert type land of destruction, and walk through it. And about the fourth time I had the dream, and it was the only time I've ever been able to wake myself up by talking, I stood still and I said inside my dream, no, I'm not going through this again. I refuse to. And I woke up. The other time was actually after my stepmother had died. And in those dreams, it wasn't anything scary. I just like this, like it was just her coming to check on me not all the time, but like I had a few dreams about her where she just show up and start making conversation. So I can relate to this one. Maybe not to the extent of having, you know, lost a partner and the fear that's within this, but oh my goodness, she conveys with her exact description of her dream, she conveys the sense of fear and the sense that comes with was searching for someone, and, you know, the physical reaction at the end. I wake sitting bolt right up, a hole blown through my solar plexus, shivering in shock and choking for breath. I think that's one of the most horrifying things about nightmares, is not being in the nightmare in the moment, but the waking up to where your body physically reacts to it. So really a powerful rite, and I'm glad she shared it with us.
Yeah, the aftermath of the dream is almost as frightening as the dream itself in a lot of ways, because sometimes you don't even feel like as if you're going to get a hold of yourself. And you know, sometimes it might just shake something loose in there. You never know, depending on the depth of the nightmare. But yeah, thanks, Pam, for sharing that. I think we have an audio for the next one, if I'm not mistaken. It is by Martha Gettle.
Oh, you know what? It got removed and didn't get put back in.
Oh, well, if you want to read that one, Pam. Sorry, Martha, we didn't have the audio this time, but it'll be read.
All right. Yep, I can do that. I had a bad dream again last night, and I woke up in a cold sweat full of fright. My hands were shaking, my body too, and I looked around the room to make sure it wasn't true. Sometimes I hate to go to bed. Just the thought of it fills me with dread. In my nightmares, I always see the worst thing that could happen to me. Bad dreams, bad dreams. It couldn't be as bad as it seems. Life can really get you down when those bad dreams come around. But they are just shadows in my mind, and when I wake, I leave them behind. They say it's darkest before the dawn, and with the sun, life goes on. Bad dreams, bad dreams. It couldn't be as bad as it seems. Life can really get you down with those bad dreams, when those bad dreams come around. So as I go to bed tonight, I'll snuggle into my pillow tight, and I'll hope as I go to sleep, I don't have another bad dream. End poem.
Yeah, so it seems as though she did this in a song format. Thank you for that read, Pam. You like, yeah, because that's chorus in here, and it does repeat, but I still, the rhyme was great, and it told a story and told, you know, about these dreams that she keeps having, and she fills her with dread, and she always sees the worst things that could happen, and that's why I say, like, you know, we're our biggest adversary, because our mind is strange in that way, because it can twist and shape everything to make it seem as though, you know, terrifying and or beautiful. Like, you know, our entire perception takes place in our mind. So if that gets warped and twisted against us, you know, what are we supposed to do about it besides fear? Some of us have the strength to be able to overcome that. And she said that here, like, life can really get you down when those bad dreams come around. So as I go to bed tonight, I'll snuggle in my pillow tight, and I'll hope as I go to sleep, I don't have another bad dream. But she also says they are just shadows in her mind, and when she wakes up, she leaves them behind, you know. And she realizes that they're dreams, at least, and that they don't have any power over her, really. And that's really hard to do, and it takes a strong will to kind of overcome one's own mind. So I think she did a great job with that, and great rhyme and good read, Pam. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Great rhyme, a wonderful lyrical quality. She definitely balanced out the two thoughts, as you said, that, you know, sometimes we fear going to sleep because of nightmares, because of bad dreams. But on the other hand, we just kind of have to constantly, like, we have to remind ourselves that it's only a dream, you know, that we can't let it control our life or get us down, you know. And so, you know, I think that's a really important thing to mention, is it couldn't be as bad as it seems. Life can really get you down when those bad dreams come around. And I'll hope as I go to sleep, I don't have another bad dream. So wonderful lines. Very well done.
And for those who want to hear Martha's recital, it's on her poem. Like, you can click her SoundCloud, because I forgot to have it put back up. My apologies, Martha. But for the moment, we will move on. And let's see, what else do we have? Funnel Traps. I think I will read that one. Okay, let me post it to the room. And let's see. This is Funnel Traps by A.R.M. Mundell. I woke within a forest, mark light through silhouetted eaves. A stillness permeated, like all the woods were coma deep, the edges barely catching the frozen rays between the leaves. No creature called to others. Light, night, and trees held fast asleep. No movement stirred. The air I breathe, except that which came from I. Every sound I uttered exploded out like a falling sky. And as I moved on through it, isolation spaced each tree. Stood lone in their own clearings, but far distant from lonely. Eyes traveled down the trunks of each to rest as my heart sunk. Cones of spider webs extend funnel wide around each trunk. Ramble like consistency in snarled layers like curtains hung. Segments skip from openings to where dark creatures slept unstung. Each a blackened version, animals mostly soft by light, but radiant harm with every moment in my sight. Badger, fox, dog, polecat, owl, a mighty large tusked boar, all tethered to the funnels spreading out on forest floor. And I awake amongst the sleep, tiptoeing their deadly traps, trying not to trigger a realm of horrors I couldn't put back. I dodge each strand to slightly far, but foot fumbles, twig snaps, dread growls, bright reds blink open, screaming panic. My nightmare fades to black. End poem. So, that's quite a visual there, with the whole trees, separating, and there being no wind whatsoever, just dead silence. And he said that there was like eyes traveled down the trunks of each to rest as my heart sunk, like eyes were traveling through the tree trunks, and then he was surrounded by all these deadly animals that would basically rip you to shreds, and he just had to try to sneak past all of them, and then ended up being devoured. And another horrible way to go, to be devoured. Feel nature's fury. It was both beautiful and then horrifying at the same time, like, because it transitioned into a scene of horror and very nightmarish indeed. Thanks for sharing that one, Mundell. What did you think, Pam?
Oh my goodness, yeah, this one definitely gave me the heebie-jeebies. Have you ever watched videos or read about funnel web spiders?
Nope, I have not.
You have to do that. They're one of the most poisonous spiders. Like, they live in Australia and other coastal areas in the world, and they build these funnel-like spiders. Like, if you're anybody who gets creeped out by spiders, and I'm okay with spiders, unless they land on me, then I do this horrible flailing dance. But these things are so creepy because they have these webs that are shaped like funnels and then prey like small animals or birds. And they're tarantula-sized spiders, slightly smaller than a regular tarantula, but not much. And and they are actually very antisocial, very shy, and they only come out occasionally to grab their prey or to mate, you know. So, but yeah, they're and so, you know, if you know that those kind of things and you read a poem like this, you're going, oh my gosh, I'm so glad it wasn't me having this nightmare. Now, on a technical level, the poem has a wonderful flow to it. I like how she very vividly describes her imagery, and, you know, takes us into the nightmare. Because I remember commenting on this and her commenting that it was one of the most horrifying dreams she ever had. And I could understand that. But no, I actually highly recommend, Robert, that if you want to see a fascinating poisonous spider, you get a chance, watch some a video on the funnel spider. Unless you have arachnophobia, then I suggest you don't do it. So.
You know,
but this is an excellent write.
I was thinking, yeah, it most definitely, now that you put it into more perspective for me, I never knew about them. And it sounds very interesting. And I was thinking, arachnophobia, that seems like a good show. I might do that. But because so many people are afraid of spiders, I might just do resurrect the fear one again, you know, spiders and snakes and things that people seem to be afraid of. This really kind of... now that you mentioned it, and I went back and I read it again, I was like, makes a whole lot more sense, because I was oblivious to it. So thanks for helping me out with that. And I might just check out the funnel spider thing, because I'm the same. I don't mind them, so long as they're not, you know, trying to kill me, and so long as they're not crawling on me.
Yeah, right.
That's fine. You know, it's like, dude, mind your space over there. Go ahead. You got your, you know. But, yeah, that's an interesting perspective, and that puts more light into it. Yeah, thanks for that, Pam, and thanks for the write, Mundo. So now we will move on to this one by Kenny W., and I can have you read this, Pam, if you would like.
Sure, I would be happy to. All right, let me just get on back to Late Night Poets and Of a Chance by Kenny W. And it goes like this. Are my dreams in technicolor? Are my dream nightmares black and white? Can both these bedmates occur within a single night? A friendly ghost or an evil one in slumber's phantom grip, leading me down the garden path on a drugless trip. Which one to trust? Both offer out a skeleton hand, not as simple as love or death in those never world lands. I can end up in some blind alley or inside a heavenly gate, monochrome madness or an ecstatic fate. Wake to reality in a real shock, which dream world is true? Which hand should you take when both ghosts are you? End poem.
Oh, well, that was interesting. I really enjoyed that ending, because it reminds me of, because I wrote something recently called "What We're Basically Just Shadows of Ourselves," and when it says, which hand should you take when both ghosts are you, you know, it also brings to mind I forget which Proverbs it was, but they were saying that you have two wolves inside of you. I think it was a Native American proverb saying, you know, which one you feed is the one that, you know, basically grows the strongest. If you feed the fearful one, then you're going to live a life of fear. Feed the noble one, then of course your life may be meager but noble. So I don't know, this really got me thinking about that and with that ending. But also too, like the diversity that dreams represent, like they said, I can end up in some blind alley or inside a heavenly gate, monochrome madness or an ecstatic fate. Like there's no telling what's going to happen. And there's so many possibilities that the mind presents, and so many paths and beauty and horror that can partake in a single night, of whether it be dreams or nightmares or a combination of the two. So, yeah, he summed that up very nicely. And I thought it was a great write and great rhyme too. Good read, Pam. What did you think?
I have to agree. Yeah, Kenny W. is a wonderful rhyming poet. I like how he took this. I like how you mentioned the Native American proverb about the two wolves, because I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, you're right. It does have that feel to it. And I like how this touches on the duality of human nature, how we all have our sanity and our madness, how we all have our good and evil side. And sometimes within dreams, you know, it's hard to distinguish one from the other. You know, I thought this was a great take on the chosen prom, which was they promised that dreams can come true, but forgot to mention that nightmares are dreams, all are dreams too. And I really like the lines, which one to trust, both offer out a skeleton hand, not as simple as love or death in these never world lands. You know, and I think that, you know, I think though that this could apply to real life too, and not just nightmares, because life isn't black and white. You know, there's always going to be those different variant shades when you have to make decisions in life. So excellent write here and very well done.
Yeah, in that aspect, it very much reminds me of The Matrix, where he's like, well, the problem is choice. You know, if I choose choice A or choice B, choice A might lead me to C, and choice B might lead me to T. You never know where you're going to go and how life is going to play out. So it all begins with choice. So, yeah, that's a very good take on it. So is it just still me and you, Pam?
For now, yep.
Which is fine, by the way.
So far.
All right. So we will move on. And let's see, I will post this one to the room. Does this one have a audio with it, or?
We have absolutely no audios for this show.
Oh, so, okay.
My apologies.
Oh, well. Yeah, it's fine. For anyone that's curious, Poetess Love has a link to her reading, so if we don't do it justice, hey, go listen to the poetess herself. So this is Evil Hands Countdown. 10. The window of my passional daydream reveals a bitterness not within sight, explaining nightmares of evil hands wrapping themselves around my soul at night. They try to pull me well deep within, evil hands that soul rules the night, tried to turn my once sound sacred dreams into loud nightmares ruled by fright. 8. They tried to pull part of my dream where I was doing quite all right. Them hands and dark thoughts follow me, but they will never win the fight. 7. Escape the looming shadows with the help of dawn's first light. Rebuke those hands in his name and believe they will take flight. Windows in my daydreams are not within sight, but evil's hand will never win the fight. And boom. Sorry, I made a few mistakes there, Miss Poetess Love, but great poem nonetheless. I did like the structure. I haven't really seen it presented in this way. And I have to go and listen to how she read it herself. And but the rhyme was on point. It seemed like a refrain of sorts to her, or something along the lines of that, to where it kept coming back to the same end rhyme, kind of like Raven-esque type poems, which I enjoy highly. And her realizing that, you know, these nightmares, they're not going to be the end of her, because they're not going to be able to win against her because her will is too strong. Whether she gets her strength from, she gets, you know, she has a lot of it, and it's not going to get her down. Like, they tried to pull a part of my dream where I was doing quite all right. Them hands and dark thoughts followed me, but they will never win the fight, you know? So, even though it gets rough and it's hard to maintain sometimes fighting against yourself and your own mind, it, like I said before, it takes a very strong character to be able to notice what's going on, to realize that, and to take the battle into your own hands and win it. So, yeah, she did a very good job with that. And, you did a great take on the prompt. So thanks for sharing that, Poetess Love. What do you think, Pam?
I think she did this in a very creative way. And I like how you mentioned having to take the battle into your own hands. I like that she did this in the form of a countdown, and not only had the numbers provided, but also that each part offered up number of syllables, as she says in her AN, the countdown is in syllables. I like that. I thought that was a really cool way to do it. It gave it a format type feel, and the countdown actually, it kind of made me think of how when you're going and have surgery or something and they do the anesthesia, how they have you start counting down backwards from like 10 or wherever. Yeah, it gave me that thought of going into like that kind of dreams that, under anesthesia. I really liked the imagery in this, especially they tried to pull part of my dream where I was doing quite all right. Some hands and dark thoughts followed me, but they will never win the fight. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah, I as far as the syllables go, it kind of like when I think of it, I was telling a friend about it recently about an ethery, because the etheries, they have they start with ten or one syllable and work their way down from or up to 10, and each line has the number of syllables, like one syllable, two syllable, three syllable, all the way up to 10.
Yes.
So that's what it seems like, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And actually, syllable count forms are my favorite to do, because like I have such a hard time with exact meters that you have to create by sound. Like, you know, like I forget what some of the names are for, but yeah, you know how they have exact meters and you're supposed to go by like just what you hear by the da-dum, da-dum. Well, I struggle with that. But when you have one where you, because I've done like, I think that Ethereum form or something similar, to where if you just, all you have to do is write an exact like syllable count for the lines, and voila, you have a form and you look like a professional poet. So, yeah.
I know it made me feel like hot shit when I was doing like etheries after I read about them. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I'm awesome. And it's like, I can do an etheree, and then I can do a reverse etheree on top of that. So, you know, it really, there's a whole lot of ways you can write poetry, and then you don't even have to conform to anything. But a lot of times when people get creative with their poetry, it's always something nice. So yeah, thanks for that, Poetess. For now, we will move on, unless we have callers, which I don't, but we will go to this one. And you can read that one for me, Pam, please.
All right. My Unpublishable Dreams by Lord of Beads. I've been working for 20 years with permissions and rights, but I still look for work in my dreams some nights. I visit undiscovered places constantly and see some unborn people repeatedly. The rhyme of my dreams is forgetfulness. I wake up in a state of mind nakedness, trying to write down a scenario on a white paper. I want to hug it as a dream protector. and I can't pause a movie in a theater. As I can't pause a movie in a theater, I also wait until the movie is over. But at the last moment, I feel hypnotized and forget everything, but I'm unsurprised. This is a kind of dream world copyright and can be described as a mental bite. I acted in dreams, films as much as my hair. They are all forgotten and I don't care. And if they belong to another world, time travelers don't take anything, but Lord, I've been told many times to go to a deep sleep and give dreams a rest. Immediately the clock or someone woke me from sleeping like a jest. It's a nightmare, no dreams can be shared. I feel like I'm a snail carrying my entire world under my heart in a fairy tale. I should have been at least a screenwriter by now. I wish they would let me write one of my nightly show, like a documentary filmmaker with magic breath. I wish they threatened me with death, and I had the right to write their mission, as if they are not going to give me permission. The whole scenario will be censored, and my success will be surrounded. I don't want to self-censor. I have no word for censure. I have not lost my hope. Hope my nightmares will end. Nope. End poem.
Yeah, that was an interesting write, because it went all over the place. First, it took him like as being calling himself, but like he should have been a screenwriter by all the stuff that he experienced during his dreams. And I used to tell people that, I was like, man, I wish I could draw like the stuff that I see, because I could make like comic books, or I can make, you know, so much stuff off of just the things that I've seen, because they're so diverse and so creative. And the funny part that made me chuckle a little bit was, says, I acted in dream films as much as my hair. They're all forgotten and I don't care. Like, you know, like his hair is gone too, but he doesn't really remember any of the nightmares as they come by. He just knows that they're there. And that's another thing, is that a lot of times some people can't remember their dreams, which, you know, is very common. And you wake up and you're terrified and you don't even know why, like sometimes. Or sometimes you wake up in a really good mood and you just don't know why, because of, you know, the forgetfulness that comes with it, because the mind is supposed to shut down. But obviously that's not always the case. And the way he took it, like the route that he did, like, hey man, they should be paying me for I should be a screenwriter by now, or you know, saying those little things, and really gave quite of a story to it, you know. And it kind of the progression of it kind of led you along the path, and you could kind of understand what he's talking about and see where he's going with it. And at the end, it says, hope my nightmares will end. Nope. Like, he knows that they're not going to stop. So all he can do is just talk about it. So yeah, that was a pretty interesting poem there, Lord of Beads. What did you think, fam?
Yeah, I have to agree. It is interesting. And I did like how he ended with the word nope. Now, I have read before, while doing some research, you know, online on dreams and nightmares, is people who remember their dreams are usually lighter sleepers. Like, they'll wake up, they'll be those people who, even if they don't remember waking up, will wake up for a little bit in the middle of the night. And for some reason, people who do that have the type of brains that usually remember dreams better. There is also, though, that sometimes our mind just needs to protect us, or feels like it needs to protect us. You know, I have seen Lord of Beads write poems before about his writing work getting stolen. So I'm wondering if maybe this is something that has happened to him in real life, that idea. And I could see that being, you know, like if you're a poet or an artist or an author, you know, a fear of having your work plagiarized. I did like the progression of this. And the idea of just wanting to be able to sleep without those nightmares. So excellent, right? Very well done.
Yeah, I can understand that. I started over quite a few times with my poetry, and every time I kept saying, all right, this is the last time, because if it gets stolen or destroyed or lost again, et cetera, that's it. But of course, my mind was like, nah, bro, that ain't going to happen. You're gonna have to keep writing. I'm sorry about that. And I was just like,
yeah.
Okay. you know, what can I do? So, yeah, it is that in itself could be a nightmarish experience, because so much of us goes into our work, you know, into our poetry, whether it be poetry or whether it be like painting or whatever. If it was to get stolen, or if you, like, your life's work was to go down the toilet, you know, it that's in itself is like nightmarish, because it's like so stressful and so anxiety producing. And then if your work gets stolen and someone else is taking credit for your work, and it's like, wow, you know, that's terrible. And I know how that feels too. So, yeah, that's actually, now that you mentioned that, that's an interesting perspective, because I did not know that about Lord of Beats. So thank you for sharing that, Pam and Lord of Beats. So I guess we will continue down this path. And I will put the next poem, and I guess I will take a read. So this one is called Hop Into My Repeating Nightmare by Bill Schiller. I'm sitting in the passenger seat of a speeding car. My hands hold remote control, controlling a car driving ahead of me. The goal is not to expose harm to that car's destiny. When a car ahead moves too fast, I go blind to its past beyond ability to see. I arrive at crash scene to be harassed for my obvious incompetency. And boom. That is shorter than I expected, obviously, but doesn't make it any less of a poem. To be sure, as we've expressed earlier with the brevity, that this, a lot can be said there. To be like driving or operating any type of machinery, like let's say a plane or motorcycle or a boat, even in a dream, is it's already stressful enough. And then he says he goes blind, and then he ends up crashing into someone, and then people are yelling at him because of you know, that it's his fault or whatever. For one thing, to be able to get into a wreck. Like to just imagine getting into a wreck is traumatic. Not only that, for a wreck that's definitely not your fault. Like you didn't have any say in the matter, or else it wouldn't have happened. That's another thing. Like that's very can be very traumatic. And the other thing is obvious: the people that were on the other end of the wreck, and you may have destroyed lives, you may have destroyed families, and you know, in a way, it is your fault because you were there when it happened. But dreams don't make sense. So, you know, he said he was holding, his hands were holding the remote control and controlling the car ahead of him. You know, and then all of a sudden, his car went fast, blinded out, and bam, crashed right into it. So that, to me, that's a very, very peculiar dream. And I don't think I'd want any part of that, because car crashes have been a big fear of mine. What do you think, Pam?
You know what? This would be definitely a dream that would scare me. I like Bill Schiller's straightforward style. Like, he's very good at just getting to the point. You know, as he says, that I must confess, mine is not one of creative imagination, rather an account of actual repeating nightmares I've experienced for years. You know, and he doesn't feel the need to add any flowery language. He just tells us like it is, this repeating nightmare. And to me, this nightmare is about, as he says, you know, he's holding the remote control, but it's the remote control to the car ahead of him. And so there's this idea of not only having your own life in your hands, but the other people's lives in your hands. There's almost this heavy weight of responsibility put on one's shoulders. And to me, I think that would be a very terrifying dream. And he had replied to me that, you know, after waking up from this dream, he often wakes up with shakes and shivers. And I can definitely understand how that would happen, because this would be a very terrifying dream to have. And as I said, I like his straightforward style. Very well done.
Yeah, like that's one of the fears I always had, operating machinery and things like cars and even like people, those people who become pilots. I'm like, wow, it takes a lot of what's the word I'm thinking of? You got to be kind of fearless to want to be a pilot, you know? You're like just hovering that, you know, thousands of pounds of metal in the air, you know, it takes a whole lot of guts to want to even do that. And there's so many people that do it, and I offer them respect. But just a car like itself, I mean, a car is like, what, 2,000 pounds or sometimes less, sometimes more, give or take, you know. But like you're in this big metal possible death machine, like anything goes wrong and boom, lives are changed forever. And it's a big fear, and it's a justified fear, you know. So that, and then the fact that it's a nightmare that he keeps having, like it keeps coming back to him, and that drives it deeper because you just can't get over it. And then you start thinking, well, is this something that's going to happen? Is this something that has happened? Like, I mean, maybe some people believe in past lives, you know. So is it like an omen? Like, is something, someone that I know going to have, you know, it really gets your mind working, and it drives up the worry wagon, you know. It's very humanistic. So like I said, it's short, but you get to thinking, man. It gets you thinking. That's,
yeah.
Thank you, Bill, for sharing that.
I actually find dreams really fascinating in the whole subject, just because, you know, like you said, there's so many, like sometimes they're completely made up. Sometimes they can be, you know, premonitions. Did you know, here's a dream fact, that every face you see in a dream is never somebody you just made up out of your imagination. It's always someone you've seen somewhere. It's just that between, like, you know, people that we see in books or online, or, you know, people we know in real life, we see so many faces during, you know, the days that we can't remember them all on a conscious level, but our subconscious remembers them.
Man, that I did not know. What makes me wonder, though, what about like the beasts and the crazy creatures and stuff and that we see? Like, have we seen those before too, or like something in your mind?
Because
I've seen some stuff, man, and I don't know what I would have seen it.
Kidding. Yeah, I've seen some pretty creepy stuff too.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta wonder if those aren't pieces of things that we've seen. You know, but yeah, because those are things of complete imagination, unless, you know, you've seen it like in books or movies. You know, I'm trying to remember if there's dreams I've had where I've had specific monsters, that, you know, but I'm sure there have been. But yeah, that is a really good question. Now that I'm going to have to look into, because I don't know for sure. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I've always found the human mind to be fascinating as well. It's quite an enigma. But, yeah. Thanks for that, Bill. Lots of thoughts. All right, so the next one is called Spirit Realm by Talia R. And if you want, Pam, you can read that for me, please.
I would be happy to. Spirit Realm by Talia R. At night, I dream of a man at my door staring at me, waving at me, wanting to get in my bed, but he got in my head. When I open my eyes, he is gone. All I see is a shadow instead, an image in the distance ahead. Tonight, I know I will see who is stalking my sleep. I definitely will not sleep. I will wake up for him because I need to see if it is my mind playing tricks on me or a thing of my past messing with my heart. End poem.
That's quite a legitimate fear too. There, lots of times, ghosts from the past can show up to haunt you, and sometimes the trauma is so great that they left with you that you can't tell if it's a nightmare or if they're actually at your doorstep. I know that there have been people that I knew that went through abuse, and they kept, you know, picturing their abuser, whether it be in their dreams or just like flashbacks or whatever, because like I said, the mind is strange and it just, it tortures you in that way. Sometimes with the trauma, and it's, you get PTSD from horrible, horrible things that have happened to you. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a relationship standpoint, like an abusive, let's say spouse or whatever. It could be parents, it could be family, friends, it could even be strangers, you know. Things happen to people, and a lot of times they're like how you said before, the mind tries to protect itself and saying this is just a dream, you know, like this is just a dream. But sometimes you can't tell, like you cannot tell if it was only a dream or if it was actually taking place. And that is one of the scariest things, because since you're so caught up in it, like you don't realize what is what, and it could actually physically be your downfall. And so, yeah, like this is very, very intriguing and thought provoking as well. Like, because there's so many people that go through this, you know, they go through this type of PTSD because of abuses they suffered in the past, or people that they know of that have caused these types of abuses, in my opinion. That's just, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but that's what it seems like. What do you think, Pam?
No, I really like what you had to say. And I don't know if that's the way she meant it, but I think you bring up a really good point. You know, I think with her right and your comment, it's a great way to look at the poem and an important subject. You know, I think too often when people think about dreams that involve sex or involve, say, a man wanting to get in your bed, they might think, you know, right away, ooh, this is one of those good dreams. But it's not always one of those good dreams. Sometimes it's the dream someone has when they are suffering, as you said, from the PTSD of sexual abuse, of rape, of molestation. And, you know, to me, I like how this is very clearly a nightmare, and yet there's not a lot of details. It's not graphic. It's not violent. The nightmare is in not knowing. Knowing you are being watched, but not knowing who is watching you. Knowing that they want to get into your bed, but not knowing exactly what is going on. And I liked how in the end there's this idea of wanting to seek out the truth, seek out the message behind the dreams, because I think that's an important process in a part of the healing process. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah. Closure is very important. And it's one of those things, it's like putting a cork on your brain leaking. Because lots of times we need to know, like we need the answers and things like that. And sometimes it could get to the point to where it becomes an obsession that you need to know type of thing, you know? So, I can understand that, but, yeah, that's, like I said, these pieces are excellent pieces. They provoke a lot of thought. Some of them are not, you know, not even that long, and they, you know, get us going, rambling on. So they have a lot to say about it. Thanks for sharing that, Talia. So the next piece I will have you read, Pam, and it is posted in the room.
All right. My Hair Separates From Me by Jesna Sajan, and it goes like this. Hair is a woman's glory from the root of her mane. She sways it, treats it like the waves of the ocean. She gallops in speed on a fast-moving horse, hair so magnificent in various shades and coarseness. My nights become slow when my hairs are pulled out. It starts in my lows, stress becomes alarmingly hot, grease itches my mane, the itches becomes a menace, baldness comes in circles, scalp pimples are the triggers. I tried my best to change my residence, food, habits, and lifestyle. My demons strangle me again, my worst comes back on. My hair was my glory, my relationship birthed in death. People do not understand. I am normal to be with. Smokers haunt me. My lungs expand, gets hurt. Alcohol gives me chills, retros of my childhood wounds. My favorite food are tempting. My hair roots get spooked. Scalp roots inflame, starts the hair pulling choke. Decade-long nightmare. It has separated me from loved ones. People become amused. Some call me mad, crazy, lazy. They say I never make efforts. I do not care about my life. I am scared to be among people. My nightmare exposed. Death, doomsday, demons are my narcissistic advocates, searching for a pill that will convert all these those heresies. End poem.
Wow. Yeah, this delves back into the descent into madness from the nightmares. This is very similar in some ways to what I was going through, although mine was quite, you know, chromatic and all over the place. Hers seemed to be more focused and around a certain issue. And that's what happens. Like a lot of the times, like I can only take my own experience. Like when I used to have these dreams and I used to tell people what I saw and I used to, how I used to be all the time. Like it just drove me to feeling a certain way. And, they didn't want to be around me anymore but it wasn't my fault. You know, it kept happening. So I can really relate and understand, in a way, in some way what she's going through, because her experiences are her own. But from what you described here, it seems very similar. Like you become alienated, you become like the laughing stock, you become poked and prodded and made fun of, you know, and people just stop talking to you because they think that you're strange or that you're playing a joke or that, you know. And that's not the case. Some people really see things and some people really need that friendship and or relationship or whatever it is that they can really confide in people and get that comfort and some solace, you know, but it never happens. And then this is an example too of the dreams following you into life, like into reality. Like it changes you sometimes depending on the person and depending on the circumstances. The dreams can really, really change you. And usually for the worse when it comes to stuff like this. Like she was just having like visions of her hairs and it's falling out and all those pimples, and she changed the way she ate and all that stuff just to try to get rid of, like she made lifestyle changes to try to get rid of it, and she still couldn't. And in the end she just is like, you know, hell, I'll just resort to searching for a pill that will just convert all the heresies, you know, that will change it all, to make them all go away or become something else, because what they are right now is just too much, you know. So that's a very relatable, very powerful piece, Ms. Jesna. And what did you think, Pam?
I have to agree with you that this is relatable. It is powerful. You know, this is one of those that hits really hard. Like it talks like on the idea of having a physical condition. Like I know there is actually a physical condition where people lose their hair, and there's also ones where people nervously pull out their hair. But it, you know, and to me it speaks on anxiety, It speaks on stress and losing control of our lives. But, you know, it also speaks to me on the way that people judge other people. Like, you know, when people have physical ailments where there's, like, you can see that their hair looks different, their skin looks different, and people tend to judge that. As it says, people became amused. Some call me mad, crazy, lazy. And, you know, that happens with depression too. Like, people think with depression, you can just snap yourself out of it. That, you know, you don't have to just lay on a couch and just and curled up in a fetal position. And I'm very lucky that I found a good medication that works for me for my depression. But I remember spending many years even feeling like calling myself lazy because I thought I could just snap out of it. And this has very visceral imagery. And I like how she takes us through the imagery and on the fear of not fitting in and the challenge of having to take care of herself. So powerful, right? And very well done.
Yeah, it very much speaks to depression as well. Because I know that too. Like I talk to my friend, I tell him, it's like, man, why am I like this? Like, why can't I just do this? Or why can't I just do that? And your mind just doesn't let you. Like, you just can't. And you try to do all you can to make progress, and it's just so tiring, so fatiguing. And, you know, so I get that a lot. But, yeah, thank you, Jesna Sajan, for sharing that. And we will move on. So this one I will read. And it is The Big Bad Bear by Denny Three. I had a dream, neither sweet or fair. I had a dream I was mauled by a bear. I pinched myself in hopes of wake, my nightmares making me quake, pinched against its hard embrace. The black bear is a sacred flare. Grizzly is downright and mud-pressed frightened. The polar is anything but a shy kitten. Mom bear, beware of being bitten. Can I escape with my life? This dream must end, whether day and night. Heavy footprints behind me and up ahead. A stalker that wants to see red. Hungry, scared, or fierce. I don't care of its needs. I try not to drag my feet. The sun is coming down. Is darkness my friend or foe? Sleep is keeping me awake. I can't feel safe. A grunt or growl, a bite of flesh unwoven from its bone, a delicious mixture of vomit and blood is sprayed like a zombie hungry for brains. I am being eaten, torn from my limbs. Some teeth are missing. I can feel my lips snagging open and my eyes bleeding. Breathing is difficult and labored. Red, green, and brown is in front of me like Christmas, chilled to the bone, or perhaps my bones split open. I take one last hard breath. I am broken, a beat-up rag doll, for any purpose but for playing, killed in an instant. Mother Nature is chilling. End poem. So the part that really grabbed me is kind of the sun is coming down. Is darkness my friend or foe? Sleep is keeping me awake. I can't feel safe. So this goes back into what we were talking about before, about the depth and that the brain has, like, that creates such depravity and such scenarios, like, that we not only see on TV, but we create our own self. Like, to be mauled by a bear, like, can you imagine? That's like, to see that, to feel it, to have all the smells and the sights and the colors and that were being portrayed there. And to feel your bones cracking and your eye bleeding and all those things. But he's basically said, sleep is keeping me awake is the thing. And it's like, how ironic is that? you know, you're so scared to sleep that you have to stay awake. But eventually we have to sleep, and the mind makes it so, because we end up having micro naps and falling asleep sitting in our chair for like an instant or a few seconds or whatever. And even though the body needs it, like the brain needs it too, but we can't help it because we can't feel safe. And I read somewhere that when the brain doesn't get enough sleep, like when you don't get enough rest, the brain starts to actually eat itself. And that in itself is a horrifying thought. But, you know, how many people have been debilitated by this to where they can't operate or function like in normal society? You know, their brain has been mushed from these nightmares, and all people say is pills, pills, pills. And sometimes a pill will help, but sometimes talking about it will help too. And a lot of people don't want to do that. A lot of people don't want to embrace other people and share their problems. And because one, they fear that they'll be judged. And two, they fear they'll be misunderstood. And three, it's very personal. You know, like you don't want to go and just tell everybody your problems. So that's why I like poetry. You can go and you can just write all your stuff down and write these things down that are bothering you or that you've seen or that you thought of. And you can share that with other people without much fear of backlash, you know, depending on the subject and depending on the people. But that's why it's a great outlet. And I'm glad that they were inspired to write something for us. And I thought it was great and horrifying. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I definitely agree. This is horrifying. I mean, I understand having a fear of bears because they are very dominating predators. Now, I personally don't have that fear, though I should. My roommate keeps telling me when I go for walks, you know, you should be afraid of bears. And it's like, but I've run into them over and over again in my life. And what I found is that in my experience, and I know there are bears that do attack people, so you do want to be wary of them, is anytime I've seen a bear, it just keeps walking. Like, they don't bother you unless you bother them. Now, I will say I have read that polar bears are the one kind of bear that will hunt humans for food, whereas most will just leave you alone as long as you leave them alone. We actually have this 300-pound bear that's getting into our garbage, and I apologize to any vegans out there, but hunting season is going to start soon, and he may end up being chili, and I am looking forward to that. But but no, this poem was very well written. I like the way he felt comfortable enough to share his fear, share his nightmares. I like the visceral imagery, how he brings the idea of not only the imagery, but the sounds, the grunts, the growls, the tearing, you know, the horror within this, right, is very, you know, you can just feel it all. You can even feel the tension. So excellent write and very well done.
Indeed. Man, animal attacks. One of the things that reminds me of is I had a big fear of the ocean, obviously, and shark attacks. So, you know, even though I'm not going to be in the ocean, but who knows, maybe there's sand sharks. Yeah. In any case.
Sharknado is going to come get you.
Life. Yeah, dust devil of sharks. but in any case, I'm going to post this one by Faziana. And I will have you read it, Pam.
All right. And just in case it's needed, I did put up a second poem of mine. You know. And Sand-Dusted Pillow by Faziana. And it goes like this. Nightmares can creep into waking hours, self-fulfilling prophecies, as they spur overreaction. Thinking I will fall to the left, I crash to the right, overcompensating. Yet with his sand, Morpheus inspires Stockholm Syndrome. We cling to dreams gone awry. Some weep from oversleep. insomniac eyes redden both on the bloody down of raven stuffed pillows and poem.
Man, she had to get me with the raven stuffed pillows. That's
that would get you.
Yeah, that's a good one. Dang it. Why didn't I think of that? In any case, no, the oversleep, some week from oversleep, insomniac, eyes redden. I know that to my core, so I get that as well. And then thinking I will fall to the left, I crash to the right, overcompensating. A lot of times that happens to where I've woken up, like when I used to have really bad nightmares, I wake up and I'm like, by slamming myself into the wall by accident because I'm trying to pull away from whatever it is, and I overcompensate and I just throw myself into the wall like a face first or whatever, like just roll over on my bed and hit it. And so when she mentioned that, it immediately made me think of that. And I'm sure that many people have experienced that, to where you even throw yourself off your own bed because you're trying to get away from something and you pull yourself to the wrong side. And yeah, but I like Morpheus inspires Stockholm syndrome. We cling to dreams gone awry. That's pretty awesome, I think. My opinion. What do you think, Pam? Like, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I like this one. I like how she reminds us that oftentimes nightmares do creep into our waking hours. And I do have to say, Morpheus inspires Stockholm syndromes, and both on the bloody down of raven stuffed pillows are definitely enviable lines. You know, the kind of lines that would inspire good poetry from others. I do like that she mentions the self-fulfilling prophecies, the idea where we can become our own worst enemy, that we can convince ourselves that something is true to the point that it happens. So just a wonderful dark write on those type of nightmares that come to us both in our dreams and in our waking life. So very well done.
I agree. I think those are probably the worst ones that follow us into the waking hours. So we will continue on with this crusade. And yeah, your poem is next, Pam. I will post it and you can read it. And you said you had another one there too, so I'll read one of mine after you.
All right, that sounds good. All right, and this is A Midnight Veil, and it goes like this. Beauty is deceptive, luring one into a trance to walk a line to the crossroads noose, swaying in the festering breeze. Storm clouds pour their broken hearts down upon her upturned face. She is indifferent to their suffering. A midnight veil hides the fire of vengeance in her eyes. The skies are thick with smoke, entangled with stinging senses, and the perversion of nature mocked. Painted lips sing a song of broken wings and angels falling upon crumbled gravestones. The tides are turning to the ways of ancient waters, burdened beasts refusing to carry the weight of war upon their backs. A stampede of cloven hoofs run across her bite as she drinks the sanguine offering of fallen warriors who bide their last days in the piercing nails of her shadows. End poem.
Wow, that was pretty awesome. So this was a dream that you had, or like, are you came up with it, or?
No, to be honest, I feared when Phil asked for rights for your show that it, and she said, you know, I feared at this point we could go off topic. And I decided I wanted to write something new. So I just was searching online for dark art that I like, and I came across this picture. And I thought, so you know what? I'll write something new for Robert's show, and it's nothing to do with nightmares. It's just what the picture inspired.
Hmm. Well, yeah, this flows right along with it. It seems as though it could be a character from mythos of sorts, like, you know, like the person actually existed, you know, like a god of sorts. I thought of, like, you know, the old Greek gods and maybe, you know, something for some reason. I'm not sure why, but it just gave me that feel to the power in it, you know, like storm clouds pour their broken hearts down upon her upturned face. She's indifferent to their suffering. And a midnight veil hides the fire of vengeance in her eyes. So, you know, like when I think about that, like I think of like a almost like a fallen goddess or a fallen angel. She's just laying there in the dirt or in the sand, whatever. And the rain is falling down on her, and her hair is across her face, and she's just staring upwards, you know, thinking like, oh, I'm going to get my revenge one day type of thing, you know.
So yeah. That's what it feels like. Yeah. There definitely was supposed to be a mythological, you know, powerful goddess getting her revenge type feel to it. So
yeah.
I'm glad you picked up on that.
Yeah, yeah. Like the tides are turning to the ways of ancient waters, burdened beasts refusing to carry the weight of boar upon their back. You know, the whole, like I said, I always admire your poetry. And I love your word choices and the way that you choose to form them. Like you did a unique formation as well, like the way that the words are on the page, which is always interesting to me because it kind of adds something to it when you kind of have to move your eyes across the page like that. I don't know what it is, but it's just a different feeling. It kind of keeps your interest peaked. And I'm not sure if that's a psychological thing or if it's just me, but I enjoyed the power and the beauty and the darkness of this piece because vengeance pieces are always, I don't know, they're not always nice. That's not the right word, but I enjoy them. I'll just say that.
Well, you know, well, I think what it is that's enjoyable about vengeance pieces is because we know in real life we can't get revenge. And
yeah.
So we get it in poetry.
True. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, why not, right? You know, like make up a fictitious thing about it. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. But yeah, that's a great piece, Pam, and I'm glad that you got inspired to write something, whether it be from the contest or from another source. It's very much enjoyed. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Okay. I will do a piece. And then there's two more from us, and I think that will be it. So here is one that I collaborated with the poetess named Fallen Alone. It is called Eternal. Forsaken in this burning rage, I dwell in the flames of sorrow, decaying. I live here, the place that nursed my being. And has now become my purgatory, cast out, chained, bound to an infinity of inexplicable torment, wailing, writhing in swallowed silence, withering slowly in painful atrophy. I am constrained by the tethers of eternity, diminishing all hope in timeless agony. Secluded in this lonesome realm, I wander alone under the unforgiving night, praying for another solace from this anathema. I dance in the depths of insanity while still looking at the chiaroscuro of dusk, searching for the sightless sanity. The endless darkness, it inhabits any notions of peace, any light or joyful spark has been enveloped in spiraling obscurity, consequently engulfing all petty aspirations. And there I reside, and that cartilaginous locus, singing the song of a widowed love, while shackled to this ebon existence, I drown in the memories of a wretched truth that I am too far gone to embrace. Empty dreams of a tomorrow that never comes leave this soul in utter turmoil, perpetual suffering overwhelms, and the assurance of an immortal anguish becomes too much for this wilted race to withstand. The infernal curse incites the torturous screams that echo for eons, indefinitely resounding upon my shattered spirit. I wish for a moment's comfort, so that my aching soul may finally drift into a dark, ethereal slumber. End poem. So what did you think?
Great. Well, I thought this was absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's definitely a seamless collaboration. The both of you together balanced out your words really well. And I like the consistency and theme. Wonderful choice of language and imagery. I really like how this speaks on feeling trapped in a personal hell, as it mentions, a purgatory. Sometimes I have to admit, when there's collaborations, I get a little nervous about picking specific parts for fear I'll only pick one person's parts. So I'm going to say that as a whole, I really appreciated the darkness in this. I appreciated the feeling of being lost, of being overwhelmed. This is another one that has a mythological feel to it. The idea, it's mythological, and yet at the same time, it's reality, because it's just the idea of that darkness that won't let itself go of you. Outstanding write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Fallen Alone was a very talented young writer. And I hope they're doing well. I haven't talked to them in a while. But this, kind of made me smile a little bit, because I was like, oh, wait a minute. Because I was just talking to you about your piece being about somebody cast out and cast down. And in this one, it actually resembles that too. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. I forgot that was even there. So it's interesting how in some of these topics, unknowingly and unwittingly, they end up being similar, some of the rites. So it's interesting.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah, I see she's been offline over a week, and her last poem was written 7 months ago. She seems to be very talented. So, hopefully sometime she'll come back to writing poetry.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so too. So this one is yours, and it is in the room if you would like to read it.
All right. And this is actually, just so you know, it's basically a work of fiction inspired by, it's inspired by the quote, "In the sunlight I observe, in the darkness they bleed." And I think it was supposed to be basically about a serial killer, just a little headway, so, people don't think I'm too psycho. All right.
<Good disclaimer.
laughs> All right. This is The Death of Culture, and it goes like this. I sit upon a park bench. The temperature is mild, and not a single dark cloud threatens rain. This is as close to perfection as one can get in this festering metropolis. The cyan sky dares me to breathe deep. I will not, because I know my senses shall be assaulted by the stench of progress. Even now, on the verge of holding my breath, I can smell the polluted smoke from factories where children work themselves near to death to support their families because their drunk, fornicating fathers have failed to do so, and the whores displaying their wares reeking of cheap perfume and unwashed, overused sex organs, independent women who claim they don't need man or his money. I wonder if each time a man spills himself into the orifice of his choice and hands them a shilling, do they recognize the irony? I long to be in my room with my books and a nice hot cuppa, I want to hide myself away from this insane world, which has slowly chiseled away at common decency. But alas, duty calls. There are those who prefer the covers of darkness. I prefer to observe in daylight, because no one is ever suspicious of a man who can sit in the light. Right now, I have my eyes set on a particularly delicate mouse of a strumpet, whose regulars include several upper-class businessmen and a bishop. Tonight, I will remove her from this life so there will be one less stain upon this city I call home. My fingers twitch. It has been too long. The last one had been a full-figured woman with hair the color of rust and a rather vulgar vocabulary. I had taken time to read to her the works of Hippocrates, the great physician, and Alexander Pope, and she had, like most of her class, remained unimpressed, to say the least. Appreciation for sophistication and genius has greatly diminished in the last several decades. Artists and poets are no longer men of culture, but common buffoons that overindulge in vices that weaken both the body and the mind. Tonight, I will offer the mouse the standard fee. I am neither unattractive or of dull wit, and therefore never end up paying extra for services rendered. We shall find a nice room where I will insist she bathe herself as I read, in hopes that in the final hours of her life, I can broaden the horizons of her thinking. Perhaps Virgil's the Aeneid, and then tonight, no matter where her soul travels, be it to angels or demons, the Latin will be translated for her. Now I will return to my room and wait for the sun to set and the silvered moon to rise. In solos ego vegeta, in tenebris sunt mineral. End poem. And oh yes, I forgot, the quote I put at the bottom was actually the translation of the Latin at the end of the poem, which was, in the sunlight I observe, in the darkness they bleed.
That's truly a hunting quote of sorts. Yeah, that seems a little too convincing, Pam, I have to say. But no, this I could actually see the entire thing like going down like a movie in my head, like it was just playing like scene to scene, and you nailed the mannerisms of the serial killer, type. Like, I'm trying to think of the words, but my brain is mashed potatoes right now.
Like the serial killer psyche.
Yeah, like the profile, you know. You nailed it. It's like sit there and observe, and then a lot of times they tend to be egotistical or narcissist or, you know, psychopaths, and psychopaths are a combination of things. So, but yeah, he basically looking down on the people he kills and trying to you know, give them some enlightenment before he kills them. And I thought it was very realistic, because I mean, people out there that do stuff like that, obviously, how many stories have we heard? But secondly, the detail is great. And then the description of the sky and, you know, the smells and, you know, the description of the women in general and who they cater to. And also, when you say, I wonder if each time a man spills himself into the orifice of his choice and hands them a shilling, do they recognize the irony? And that it's kind of, I don't know. It's very twisted. But it also really puts you into their mindset, like how they perceive these things and how debaucherous and how twisted they can be in this time of the hunt that they're choosing, you know, sizing up people and things like that. So, and, you know, claiming to be well-educated type of thing and trying to educate them as well while in turn murdering them. So, yeah, not really a good combination. I don't think guy But this is excellent. Like it's almost like its own little mini series in a way. And the Latin was a nice touch. And there was something that it brought to mind when there was a movie. Remember that movie Seven with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman? Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, it's The Head in the Box.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. So that's what it reminded me of, the killers, the way that the killer saw himself, like as if he was some like gift or whatever. And that's basically how it is, you know, in these scenarios. And you've executed it very well. So thanks for that, Pam.
Thank you.
So we will get to the last read of the night, and then we will go into our next topic. So this one is I don't know if it's a nightmare, but it to me, it felt like a vision of sorts. I've shared it before, I think, but it was a long time ago. And it was one of those things that just happened. And after it happened, like something happened in my life and it just changed forever afterwards. So it was very weird, like a very weird experience. And it was so vivid, you know, that I remembered it after so long. So it says, it's called Vision Quest. I just called it that because I didn't know what else to call it. So it says, well, I was floating in space. I saw the earth and could hear all the cries of the life forms there, people and animals alike. The longer I listened, the more it amplified. Soon I began to feel pain, seemingly all of the pain of the world at once. There was a voice that sounded like two voices together, a male and a female speaking as one. It said, look closer. And so I somehow zoomed into the world and saw all of the unadulterated horrors that took place and that were taking place. My eyes felt like fire, but I could not cry. It zoomed back out, and then there was a world. The world started spinning again. And as it did, it withered. The blue turned to brown and black. The greens faded into yellows and browns. The clouds were gone. Without moisture, the only ones that remained were the clouds of volcanic ash. The voice then said, you can choose to endure the duration of the dream and feel all the pain therein, or you can awaken. But if you do, the world will be changed forever. I said, I will endure. What now then? A celestial seeming finger pointed to the world. It all begins with sacrifice. Pain is love, and pain you shall have. The earth, a barren and cracked wasteland, began to crumble. It turned to dust and dissipated. The voice then said, what was shall be once more. My skin was torn from my body and was used as the land. My blood took the place of the water, and my bones became that of the mountains. The voice then said, it is done. You may awaken. And then I saw that the world turned blue once again, started spinning, and I woke up. And that's the end.
Oh, wow. That is really impressive. First of all, great read. Wonderful prose style. Right. I see you won gold in that, which was well deserved. I think for me to write about, you know, something this personal, I always admire when people can do this. Like this kind of dream is so deep and so like, you know, scary, you know, that, you know, to be able to share, I think is a wonderful thing. I like the title Vision Quest. I know you said you wrote that because you didn't know what else to put, but it fits because there's so many cultures, you know, Native American cultures, tribes in Africa, you know, where there is, you go get sent on a vision quest, you know, especially as a young person, a young man, you know, discovering your way in the world. And I really like this all the way through. I like how you have great attention to detail with the changing of colors. And I like how there is this mention of, you know, at the end of having to make a choice, having to realize that, you know, as it says, it all begins with sacrifice, pain is love, and pain you shall have. The earth is a barren, cracked wasteland. Began to crumble. It turned to dust, then dissipated. The voice then said, what was shall once be once more. And it really focuses to me on the idea of how much are we willing to give of ourselves for the people that we care about, for the world that we care about. And this would be one of those dreams. Like if I had a dream like this, it would definitely haunt me the rest of my life. You know, and I would be constantly searching for the meaning behind it and wondering, you know, where it came from. And I know it's just a repeating of a dream you had, and you're just putting in the details from the dream. But I think the way that you managed to carry it along with the choice of punctuation, you know, it's just showing us exactly where you want us to pause and think about it, really worked well. So this is just a really well executed poem and beautifully written, very well done.
Thank you, Pam. It was, like I said, it was very, very strange that because it was so vivid and because I remembered it so long later, like I almost always forget my dreams. But this one was one that I remembered, and it wasn't until, 6 years ago that I wrote it down. So probably like 14 years or no, probably about 10 years after I had the dream is when I wrote it down. So, you know, it's one of those things that stays with you. Yeah, I never wrote it down, period. I just had it in my memory. So,
yeah, well, I can see why it would stay with you.
Yeah, it was very haunting. Yeah. So yeah, I appreciate that. And yes, it was very personal because, as I said, when I was having those horrible nightmares, it was just nonstop every night. But after I had this particular dream, they all stopped, all of them. So that's why I didn't understand, like, why, what happened, you know? So it was just weird. It's very personal, but I thought it was kind of cool to share with the topic that we had and people sharing personal pieces. So why not, you know?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Works really well.
So, yeah. All right. Well, we did have a good lineup of poems today. I know they were from, some of them were from a week ago or 2 weeks ago from our last show. But they still are awesome nonetheless. And just by, since they're read late doesn't mean they're any less of a poem. Just remember that. So, yeah, our next topic is going to be about urban legends, one of them being the Mothman and the other being La Llorona. And these are both interesting tales. One of them is said to be based on truth, and the other is more of a myth, but who knows, maybe there is some truth to it. And that will be on the board. There is a contest up for it. If you're into urban legends, I will be doing more of those. I have quite a few things that I have in mind. You have anything else to say, Pam? Any shows coming up?
Well, Yes. Well, first of all, I'd like to say great show, and I'm looking forward to the next one with those two myths. As far as upcoming shows for tonight's Rhythm and Rhyme show, Rex is running a contest that's open to pre-writes with music of the Stray Cats. Then for After Midnight, he's running on Tuesday, he's running a contest for that show with quotes from Zappa, and two contests I have running for shows next week is Break On Through with the artwork of Yayoi Kusama and Twisted Tuesdays, the art of Isabel Meaning. And as I always like to tell people, make sure to check out all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. An awesome show tonight, Robert.
Well, thank you. I mean, it was awesome because I had awesome company too. So there's always that. So yeah, be sure to check out the boards. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Heck, even like I said, mashed potato brain like mine can get inspired from time to time. So I'm sure that you all can push out some rights. So yeah, it was. Hope everybody enjoyed the show and continues to do so in the future. And yeah, just remember, you're always welcome in the solace of shadows. Good night, everybody.